Purdue Ag Week seeks to educate consumers, engage the Purdue community, and inspire future agriculturalists through an annual week-long agricultural education and advocacy event at Purdue University.
Yet this would not be possible without the generous support of our donors. We are truly grateful to our gold-level sponsors, Keystone Cooperative, Indiana Soybean Alliance, and Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and our black-level sponsors, John Deere, Corteva Agriscience, Indiana Beef Cattle Association, Wabash, and Syngenta.
Ag Week would not be possible without you. Educate, engage, inspire. Purdue Ag Week.
I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie Dale, and this is Farming the Future, a Purdue Ag Week podcast.
Our guest this week is Mr. Mario Ortez. Well, welcome to the podcast today. If you would, please just introduce yourself and tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thank you for having me, Abby and Allie Dale. And yeah, my name is Mario Ortez, and I am currently an investment associate with Days River Investments over in Zionsville, Indiana. And I finished my doctorate at Purdue in agricultural economics and graduated in August 2022. So not quite 2 years, but yeah, I worked there with Dr. Nicole Widmar. She was my mentor and advisor, and a few other of the faculty members over there. So spent a good 3.5-4 years down in West Lafayette. Yeah, it was really good time, really interesting time. We know everything that went on in that that period of time. But before my PhD, I worked over in Colorado for JBS USA, and that's a large Brazilian-based meat processor, one of the largest in the world, in beef, pork, and chicken. Kind of like along with, you know, Tyson and Cargill, and usually mentioned together in conjunction with those. But if I'm not mistaken, one of the largest food companies in the world, right up there with Nestle, which is, of course, not a meat packer, but in similar industry. Yeah, and before JBS in Colorado, I was actually pretty close, geographically speaking, over in Manhattan, Kansas, where I got my master's at the Kansas State University, also in ag economics, which is kind of funny. I was at the career fair at K-State. I was actually not planning to go, and one of my colleagues, I saw her really nicely dressed up one day, and I was like, where are you going? She said, I'm going to a career fair. I was like, maybe I should go to that too. So I went to change and went with her and talked to a bunch of companies, and JBS was one of them. And they said, you know, after a short interview at the career fair, they said, would you like to come and interview in person over in Colorado? And at that point, I did not know that Colorado was right by Kansas. And and I also didn't know that the mountains were there. It's absolutely beautiful, but still different than Kansas. I love Manhattan, Kansas. Such a good experience. It's such a welcoming community. But just the landscape is such a stark contrast between the two states. But anyways, yeah, I spent two really good years there over in Manhattan. I was born and raised in Nicaragua, actually, so right in the middle of Central America, country that heavily relies on agriculture for subsistence. Coffee is number two or number one export commodity in the country, followed by meat, probably beef. And so, yeah, my family have been coffee farmers for many generations, going back in time. And yeah, so, you know, I grew up in a very small community, very small town, in the middle of the mountains, really beautiful. Of course, you don't appreciate it until you leave, and then you realize, you know, how beautiful it is, but it truly is. And then I left Nicaragua to get my undergrad at Zamorano University in Honduras. And Zamorano is kind of like the premier agricultural institution for all over Latin America. So I had classmates from, you know, 15, 16 different countries in Central and South America, actually founded by an American. He was dubbed in the United States the Banana Man, because he was the CEO, president and CEO of Bonita Banana Company. So one of those, like, monster of companies that had a very, very strong influence and impact in Central and South America in many different ways, even like helping topple some governments and things like that. But this gentleman, he started this agricultural trade school that eventually became the university that it is today, Zamorano, really focused on foreign agriculture. And you know, I was probably 19 when I graduated with my bachelor, so I was like, I'm probably too young to go do anything. So that's when I decided to come to the United States and spend a year at the Ohio State University, improving upon my English a little bit, which, as you can tell, I still have an accent, so it's not that it worked out that great. But and then went to graduate school at Manhattan from there in Kansas State. But yeah, that's a little bit of my background, and I guess probably related to why I'm invited to the podcast. In 2014, 2015, we invested in a small farm. My brother, myself, and an uncle, the three of us put together the capital and bought a specialty coffee farm in northern Nicaragua. So we provided kind of like the initial capital and kind of like the strategic long-term vision for the business, where we said, you know, here's a really nice plot of land that we see has some good potential in the future to do some really good, you know, coffee, probably needing capital, probably needing like the development of customer relationships, especially in the destination markets. Coffee is one of those commodities really interesting at the world level because it's grown in developing regions. So you're talking about Central America, you're talking about South America, you're talking about Vietnam and some other countries in Africa. And although it's widely consumed in those countries, big markets for it are Europe, the United States. And so it's just a, you know, at a world level, it's kind of interesting because it just happens to be that way. It has to be in a temperate weather. The parts of the world where it can be grown is limited. And of course, it's widely consumed. But yeah, so we both started with really basic things like routes of access. I don't know if you've ever been to Central America, especially the mountain regions. It's really broken landscape, way up in the mountains, really difficult to get into it. And so we started like trying to open up, devise new roads, like physical roads that could take to where the coffee is harvested and processed. And after we did that and did some agronomical practices in the farm, improvements to the prior ownership, I started talking to some customers here in the United States and talked to them about the property, the farm, the things that we were doing, the people that were on site, kind of like leading all of this work. We were successful in securing a few customers here in the US that started like giving us a shot, basically, you know, like when we didn't have a brand, we weren't established in the market, kind of like new entrants, which is probably that's kind of sexy, you know, in the coffee world. So it probably gave us an edge. And so we did that for a while. And unfortunately, late last year, fortunately and unfortunately, we decided to exit the business because the political situation is really, really tough in Nicaragua, and doing business is becoming increasingly more difficult. An important aspect of it is through labor. In case you don't know, for coffee, you literally need the hands of people to go harvest the coffee from the trees. And bad economic situation, bad political situation makes people want to leave the country. So a lot of people have left. And so labor is becoming more competitive and just tougher to get. And so we decided it's probably a good time to exit that investment. So it's very bittersweet. I'm still not used to not having my own piece of land. But, you know, here we are trying to get used to it. But anyways, yeah, that's probably a little bit longer than what you get so looking for. But here we are.
No, that's wonderful. We like to hear everything that you're involved in. So with that business that you were involved in, what were some marketing strategies that you were able to use? Especially, I mean, you were obviously bringing it to America, your business. So what are some marketing strategies you were able to implicate with that?
You know, curiously, the first one, a precursor to the marketing, was networking, right? I've actually been invited to guest lecture at a few different classes over there at Purdue, and that's a, kind of like the first thing that I mentioned in the list is networking, because it truly is important. You kind of see it in like marketing classes. It kind of sounds like a cliche at times, but like right, yeah. But you know, it really helped us. Like I was I did an internship at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange in over in Chicago, you know, 2015, 2016, and I remember I was already tired from all the presentations. It was just late in the day kind of thing. And there was kind of like a coffee break afterwards. And me, I'm very cheap. If you know me personally, I don't turn down free stuff. So I said, like, well, there's free coffee and bakery items. I'm going to go there. Although I was really tired, I was just ready to go home. And I did. And I started talking to this gentleman that was also there. And it turned out that he was a coffee buyer. And that he had a lot of experience buying coffee from Nicaragua and even knew some of my acquaintances down there. So I was like, it's such a small world. But I tell that one. And so that actually, you know, you start establishing connections like that, that makes it a lot easier for you to open up a market, especially if you are new in the industry. Like I said, my family has been growing coffee since forever, but it's all commodity stuff. And the specialty coffee that we wanted to kind of like grow, it's completely different. Economical practices are different, customers are different, marketing strategies have to be completely different. So the fact that you get to know somebody that's already been there, that has experience in that, that's really important. The other one, very important one that I like to talk about, my brother's classmate from Zamorano. He runs a really, really successful specialty coffee business in Nicaragua, and he was very generous to us when we had some of his buyers were visiting the farm in Nicaragua. And, you know, he called us and he said, hey, you guys are starting in this business. Would you be interested in so-and-so visiting your farm? And we're like, of course, you know. So we really have to say that those two connections really helped us get started. And then after that, I'd say a lot of face-to-face type of things. So us being new in the business, what we used to do is like just go to coffee shops. And especially my brother did a lot of that work, and I don't want to take too much of his credit. He was a graduate student at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, and he would just go to the coffee shops on campus and in town and just knock on the door and be like, hey, you know, we have this coffee farm in Nicaragua. Here's a sample. Would you like to just try it? Give it a shot. And you'll be surprised. A few customers started buying from us, and they like the relationship. I have to say that is true of many specialty type of food items, well, food and beverage, because, you know, traditionally speaking, we say for a marketing strategy, people want to know where things were grown and how things were grown, what are your agricultural practices, so on and so forth. But for coffee, even beyond that, people like to know who is it grown by? And maybe that is true for other commodities as well. So just being able to put a face on the grower, on your agronomical practices, and just kind of what makes your business different. Again, that all may sound cliches, but and I would have thought that too before I myself had to embark in this enterprise. But I think all of those are very true, and especially for specialty, small niche agricultural products or food products.
Most definitely. I think when we look at coffee and some of those other kind of specialty crops and items, there's almost this delicacy to them that really sets them apart and that allows people to kind of truly engage in the culture and the environment of what they're consuming. And so it's so important that we market it in that respect. Would you say that technology played any sort of really impactful role as you were kind of building your business, building your market, and your interactions with other people?
Yeah, gosh, that's so important. And it can be so basic, right? So I was telling you about the routes of access that we had to like just literally break through the mountain and make sure that my dad's truck could get to the farm and move the coffee. So you need technology for that, right? You need the equipment that's able to do that. Beyond that, one that had a really strong impact on the bottom line of our business was the fermentation process. And I'll tell you this as a maybe specific to our business, but also as an archetype for other business things that could be applicable to them. Traditionally speaking, you ferment the coffee beans after harvest. They're sent through a certain process, and then they have to process right out right inside the inner skin of the sherry of the coffee. And in between the bean and the skin, there's some sticky substance that has a lot of sugars and natural sugars. So that induces a fermentation process. Traditionally speaking, you know, my dad, conventional coffee, probably you do it for 12 hours. So you do a certain process at night and wait overnight. And then the next day you start the next step. And what we started dabbling with was longer fermentation times. So instead of just doing 12 hours, we started doing like 24 hours, 36 hours. And that gives you different flavor profiles in the coffee when you drink it. And that's a technology, right? I mean, fermentation is a technology. So it doesn't have to be like super intricate, super like high tech, but there's like small things like that that can really add value to the product you're trying to bring to market. So
you talked about there's a lot of face-to-face interaction with people you're trying to market to, and being a daughter of parents who do a lot of freezer beef customers, and that is all by word of mouth. We haven't done a whole lot of digital advertising. So have you seen any of that digital play into your marketing?
Yeah. Inevitably. And it is a tool, right? So the digital world, it is a tool that serves an end. And the end is communication in a sense, at least my experience was, because how do you share your story with the consumer? Well, you probably have a website, right? Or the retailers or the coffee shop that is selling your coffee has some sort of a information sheet or whatever about the producer and about the practices that I was telling you about. So somehow you have to communicate with the consumer. Now, another service that technology delivers to food and agriculture is the delivery method of the physical product. So for example, when I travel to Nicaragua, I bring a bunch of my coffee with me, just put it in my luggage, but I run out eventually. So what do? I order online. So I rely on the online platform of the person that was buying our coffee to buy my own coffee from them. So communication is one angle that I have experienced, I guess, directly to technology, and also just the delivery method. I love going to a store. I really do like walking through the shelves and kind of like see what food products are there and just analyzing different stuff. I might end up buying the same thing that I buy every week, but it's just kind of fun. But it's also so convenient to have the ability to have something delivered to you, to your home, especially if the source of that is not, you know, within driving distance. But technology is very important. Another thing that I would say, and this kind of relates to a very lively conversation going on in food and agriculture, is the data and data usage and the things that you can do with data. And I tell you, if you are able to take, let's say, for example, future prices of coffee off of a public source, data source, and start plotting the data and kind of seeing like price seasonality, and kind of like different price behaviors in light of like macro events that might be going on in the world or changes in consumer preferences and all of the things. So if you're able to look at the data, analyze it, slice and dice it, have the tools to do that, and then also have the critical thinking to put together what the outside things that are driving what you're seeing in your data, that can be really powerful. You of course see different universities and basically every company in the world talking about the data that you have, who owns it, how to use it best, and having the computing power and the skill set to be able to do something with it. I'll have to say, looking at the future prices of coffee, that's something, some of the things that you can be like, well, perhaps this is the best time to market it. Perhaps it's best to wait, and depending on your risk appetite, you know, and how much risk you can bear to take without jeopardizing your, well, covering at least your costs, you know.
Yeah, I'm currently in a food distribution class at Purdue, and we've been talking a lot about the data that impacts, you know, what food products are even offered, how they're offered, and how they're marketed to consumers, specifically within that digital world. So I think we're seeing that more and more as that technology has developed. But kind of continuing on that same train of thought, how do you potentially see utilizing that data and utilizing that digital platform, changing and expanding in the next 20, 50 years, kind of looking forward?
Yeah. In my humble perception, there's no going back. So we're just going to become more digital as you go. Hopefully, we're using those resources in a responsible way, keeping the humanity of things, you know, just beyond the digital. But yeah. So if I was talking to a class, I would be like, develop those tools that you need to analyze the data, develop the critical thinking. That's why, like, my degree is for in agricultural economics, and we kind of pride ourselves on like having the data analytics tools, but also being able to put the critical thinking to put the two and two together that can become a powerful thing. So I think we're going to be more interconnected. I think there's going to be more opportunities that arise from that. Like we were saying, like the way food is distributed, hopefully tackling a lot of the challenges that food industry have, like food waste and food insecurity and things like that. So now today, you know, everybody's talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning and things like that, which are just incredibly powerful tools. I'll have to say that in my perception, again, we haven't really dissected how that would like relate necessarily directly to like food and agricultural businesses. Now, of course, we're using all of this data in a really efficient way, right? Like you talk about like John Deere and the type of data they provide to the farmers and things like that. It's really powerful. They're doing practical things with it. But I think we're kind of in a discovery stage on how those will apply and improve our food distribution. So there's some really clear examples on how that has happened in the past. But broadly speaking, I think we're still in that kind of like dating time frame. We're kind of trying to figure out what the match is and how it will better serve the industry. But it's gonna be more digital, more integrated. My advice would be have the tools to do it and have the critical thinking to use those tools wisely. But...
So we're getting kind of close on our time for today, but is there something else that you could maybe share with us about agri-marketing, about your business experience that you've been involved in or any of the above?
You know, as I was thinking about this conversation before, there's what creates value, right, in a product. And there's a tendency, and as a farmer myself and as a person that grew up in farming, there's a tendency to think that the labor and the inputs that you put it into the final product determines the value, right? So if the cup of coffee cost me to produce it 50 cents, then I, in my mind, associate that that's the value of the thing. But that's truly not the case. The value is assigned by the consumer. So what the consumer is willing to pay for your product, that's what really generates value. Now, what cost me to produce it, that's just what it is. It's the cost. And it's important, and it defines the profitability of your business. But as a producer or as a small business owner or as a service provider, what you got to be thinking of is what utility is this product going to derive on the person who is going to be consuming it or using it or whatever, whether it's a product or a service. So I think from my experience over there, that's what I would say. You always think about what is it that the consumer wants. Now you can't be changing all the time, right? At some point you have to have a mission and a vision for your business, and but hopefully all of that is informed by what you're seeing in consumer trends and kind of like responding, adapting to things. But so I would say that's probably really important if you're in this industry at least.
Most definitely. And like we were just talking about, a lot of that is currently tying back to the data we're seeing. And so it all kind of comes full circle there. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, an interesting thing that I was a part of at Purdue. And so how do you discern what consumers are wanting, right? Well, you can go look at sales data. Like you can go see what Kroger is selling. You can do many, many, many things. But a new thing that it's been kind of interesting is online media, right? What people are saying online about milk, or about coffee, or about the dairy industry as a whole. You can kind of, it's kind of like a way to take a pulse of of how people are feeling about something. So that's, speaking of technology and data, that those are things that you can go do today, right? There are search engines where artificially intelligent driven, where you can just go type the name of a product or whatever else that you want, and you can see like what people are saying in Twitter or Facebook or in online blogs about you know, different stuff. So so that's kind of like a new technology that just hasn't been there for a long time, probably hasn't been exploited to a full, but it's just coming, right? Because traditionally speaking, you can go talk to people, you can go to a store, you can look at the data, but that's historical. But outward looking, other than a survey or just asking in person, these new online media type of engines are allowing you to do kind of like a little bit of a forward look on what consumers might be thinking about stuff and maybe like deriving some marketing strategies from that. And I tell you, the large putting agricultural companies in the United States and in the world are already looking at those stuff. So if you're a student, you should be kind of like trying to keep up with those technologies and maybe having a broad understanding of them.
Well, thank you so much for your guidance and your advice there, specifically, you know, about developing your business, developing your brand, developing kind of what marketing looks like. I definitely gained a lot of knowledge from that. I'm sure Allidale did as well. But overall, thank you so much for joining us today and for allowing us to kind of cultivate this conversation about agri-marketing.
Yeah, it's a pleasure talking to you. And thank you for all the work you do with the Purdue Ag Week. And good luck with your endeavors.
Thanks again, Mr. Ortez. Tune in next Friday for a new episode of Farming the Future by Purdue Ag Week. Mm-hmm.